John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. Yes, John Gambling on Friday with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He is in the house. He will be here, I am sure, shortly. Lots to talk about this morning on the list here with the mayor. Of course, the weather, the first big storm of the season, potentially. It's one of those weather deals where you just never know until it happens what is going to happen. There is this gigantic blotch of rain to the south that's going to turn into a kind of a nor'easter thing, and depending on where it ultimately goes and crashes into the cold weather, it will drop either nothing, something, or a lot, and we'll just have to wait and see further east that it goes, the worst it's going to be. The mayor was also, and look forward to asking him this question, in Copenhagen this week, looking at some things like wind farms that are in the North Sea. There is, of course, in the wind this morning, the congestion pricing is back once again. And we'll see exactly where that's going to go and what it's going to mean to us. And, of course, the MTA mess, what will happen there. You know, this doomsday budget that has been voted on by the executive board of the MTA isn't scheduled to take effect until June of next year. This is, you know, it's a planning process and what's going on there. So a lot can happen in politics and in the state and in the city between now and June, so we'll have to wait and see. Mayor Bloomberg, good morning.
Cold.
Now, I made a prediction. You remember Johnny Carson and Karnak used to hold the envelope up to his
You
head?
And I are two of the few people that are old enough to remember Karnak.
Karnak, the Magnificent. I played one of those earlier, and the answer was 275 trucks with trains, 250 pounds of salt. Question, what will the city use to fight the snowstorm this weekend?
A great mayor who's going to get the snow to go out to the eastern end of Long Island, thereby saving us some money.
Okay.
There is some snow predicted, for the weekend. And we obviously have our cadre of 350 salt spreaders, 2,000 snow plows, 250,000 tons of rock salt. Why do I know this?
Yeah, because you've got it on a piece of paper.
Our
ace
press secretary, Stu Loser, has all of this. We're also, incidentally, able to buy salt cheaper this year. We've negotiated a cost of, you know what a ton of salt costs?
I not a clue.
$59.02.
Really?
A ton.
But only when you buy it in the quantity that you buy.
12% less than we paid last year when we paid an average of $67.44.
I would think that would be a function of commodity and obviously
and
weather.
Maybe you're wrong. I don't know.
I don't know.
I have no idea why. I have absolutely no idea why.
But that's a budget closer.
Yeah, given we've got a $60 billion budget, every little bit helps. Really, all kidding aside, the thing we worry about the most is making sure that people who just don't want to be in shelters and want to live on the streets gets dangerous when the temperature gets this low. And when the temperature goes below, I think it's 32, then the courts say you have a right to force people basically into shelters for their own safety because their health, their life is really in danger. Other than that, people, you know, you can't incarcerate people. They didn't do anything wrong. Cold weather is here. It's getting ready. Hopefully we'll have a little bit of a white Christmas. Always nice. People talk about that. Some snow in the parks for people to throw snowballs at each other.
And fun things like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, and weather, you were in Copenhagen the beginning of the week. One of the things that I saw you pictured, I think that was a survival suit they put you in on the helicopter, wasn't it?
On the way there, landed on the west coast of Denmark. And the people, incidentally, couldn't be nicer. A town called Enborg, and went out in a helicopter, and they have you in these survival suits.
Water's
heavy,
cold, yeah.
The North Sea's rough. Yeah, although it was sunny, and there weren't that many waves. So we landed on, they have a platform in which there are a kitchen and bathrooms and exercise rooms and bedrooms for people who live there to maintain.
The wind farm?
Yeah, the wind farm.
Okay.
This is constant maintenance. They have, I don't know, whatever, probably 70-odd windmills in this one field, and there are two different fields. and they're almost all completed. They're up. Not all of them have been turned on, but most of them. Denmark generates 20% of its electricity from wind farms. And it's sort of surreal. They go quietly. There's no noise. They're way out in the ocean. You can't see them really from the shore. And they generate an enormous amount of energy. And we want to do the same thing off our coast and in the Midwest. The Midwest states in the United States, they're very flat, and the winds really are pretty dependable. The trouble is there's no grid to carry the electricity from where it's generated to where people are. The nice thing about wind farms off the New York and New Jersey coast, and Massachusetts, and Connecticut, all of them, is, oh, Connecticut, you've got to go really the other side of Long Island, but whatever, is that the grid doesn't matter. You're right there. It's, you know, you drop a line 15 miles and
extension
bang.
Cord.
Extension cord. Fundamentally, that's exactly right. And if we ever want to end our dependency on foreign oil, where our security is at risk, if we ever want to stop sending all our wealth to countries around the world, some of which don't like our freedoms and really allegedly support terrorists, we've got to do something about it. We all talk about it. This is something that hopefully a number of private sector groups will come up with, answer our request for proposals, and build wind farms off the coast.
Is this something the city proper is going to get involved with?
The EDC, Economic Development Corporation, can be the spearhead. We're not putting our own money. We don't have any money,
what I was wondering.
The private sector, and they sell the electricity, and it's a business proposition. And, you know, listen, is it perfect? I said to somebody who was standing there, I said, you know, if Christo and Jean-Claude had put these windmills out in the ocean,
be an art.
It would be a piece of art. That's exactly right. The windmills get bigger. The blades on these windmills are over 200 feet long, which means you're talking about something 500 feet in the air, close to that. And it's like a five-story building.
The key to the success off of New York and New Jersey, Long Island and New Jersey, is to the point where you can't see them. As long as you can't see them, people will go along with it, I think.
One hopes so.
Yeah.
Although I will say, I was in Blackpool in England a few years ago, and they had a wind farm. And if you looked at the horizon, they were pointing towards it, and so maybe I could see something, and then through binoculars, oh, yeah. You see the coal trucks, you see the oil trucks, I mean, you see the tankers.
Not anymore. They've been around too long. We don't see them any longer.
Right. Compared to all of the other stuff, this really is a win-win for everybody.
All right. Also this week, you released the study. You mentioned it last Friday when we were up at the Grand Central Terminal about the air quality and the study that the city has done.
Right. I mean, everybody thinks that some of these things are other people's problems. And I thought that what's interesting is there's an awful lot of neighborhoods that thought none of this applied to them. And when we talked about environmental justice and that sort of thing, it turns out that everybody's got the same problem. Not to take it away from those who thought they had it. They do. But so do those who thought that they didn't. We pour this stuff into the air. It comes from trucks and buses and cars. It comes from building heating and air conditioning units. It comes from a lot of different things. We don't have a lot from manufacturing facilities, but there's different kinds of pollutants. And as you would expect, the pollutants where there's particles that come from trucks, cars, and buses are near the roads. Those that come from buildings are near the buildings. Surprise, surprise. But it says we all have got to do something here. And in all fairness, we passed this buildings law, the Greater Greener Buildings Plan. I love the name. Last week, the city council did that, and that's great. That will give us some buildings impetus to clean up their act, because if you can show that it's in their interest, they will invest the money, get the benefit economically, and the rest of us will also benefit because there's less crap in the air. And the crap, forget long term, we can talk about global warming. But short term, this is the air you and your kids breathe today. If that doesn't bring it home, I don't know what does. It also congests the city streets and the economy slows down. That's your job. In your case, it's your advertisers you want for this program. They want to do business here. We've just got to focus on what's happening to us. And it's easy to say I think my eyes glaze over a little bit when everybody focuses on 20 and 30 years from now. It is, the science is real. Make no mistake about it. But it doesn't matter. Just worry about today. And today you would put the money into cleaning up the environment.
But doesn't that mean fewer cars and trucks? It's a simple statement, but a very difficult goal.
To have fewer cars and trucks, because then people can get around those that have to, and mass transit and trucks can deliver, and that will reduce your costs. You want less pollutants, which you could get from the same number of cars and trucks if they were much more cleaner. So there's two issues there. One is what's choking our economy. And when you say, okay, the traffic's terrible, well, that slows people down. The plumber that comes to fix your plumbing has to spend time driving there. And that's built into your costs. And if you could reduce his travel time, his wrench and the use of it would be a lot less. Same thing is true with the air you breathe. If you clean it up, you will not go to the hospital as much. I mean, a lot of our kids go to the hospital four times the national asthma rate.
Now, okay, Mr. Mayor, take a rest here. Let me take a break. Our first, we will be coming right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 20 minutes after 8 o'clock at WOR. Yes, indeed. And again, if you want to ask the mayor a question, 800-321-0710, 25 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, story this morning about Section 8 vouchers, public housing.
Yeah, what Section 8 vouchers are is it's federal money that they give in the form of a voucher, which you can use to help pay your rent. And the federal government has cut back, as is all governments cutting back, and we have fewer of them. And some people that really could use them to make ends meet want them, can't get them. In fact, some that thought they already had them, because we thought we were getting more from the federal government, turns out, we don't have them. I mean, it's just we really are acting as the pass-through, and it's really the New York City Housing Authority, NYCHA. John Reyes is here. He is the chairman of it, and he's got to administer this. We're fundamentally administering a federal program.
John, how many a year do you normally have? How many of these Section 8 vouchers do you distribute?
We are currently serving over 101,000 families on our Section 8 program in New York. And this is absolutely a direct result of the current economic environment in terms of the increased demand that we're seeing for families who are in need of housing assistance. In the past 12 months alone, we've added over 12,000 families to our Section 8 program, and over 24 months, closer to 25,000. And so we are sitting at the highest level of support for families, for New Yorkers in the history of the program, with over 100,000 families on the program. What we're challenged with now is about 1,500 families that have vouchers. They have not actually found apartments and had those vouchers actually provide them with rental assistance yet, but they had vouchers and were beginning to seek apartments to use those vouchers that we've had to terminate, 1,500. So not a single family who is currently being served of those 101,000 families will actually lose assistance, but there are 1,500 families who were hopeful that they would be able to use vouchers to get into an apartment that won't be able to use them.
You know, one of the things that we thought, people have these vouchers, they can pay their rent, and then sometimes they don't need them anymore. They move in with a family, move out of state, whatever, and so we get those back, and you recycle them. It's sort of a permanent thing. Because the economy, people haven't been moving out. So the attrition rate is down. Same time, the federal government's giving us less. At the same time, as John points out, the need is more because of the down economy.
On the attrition point, to put it in stark contrast, historically we've seen attrition rates that would suggest we should be freeing up about 6,000 vouchers on a program of our size. That number has been cut by more than 50%. We're seeing less than 3,000, more like 2,500 vouchers that are freeing up.
There was no stimulus money involved here that would have prevented this from happening?
Well, you know, there's this word stimulus money. You think it's everything.
But, I mean, it's...
In fact, it's been the opposite. Congress,
really?
in order to fund other programs and other priorities, Congress actually took back $750 million across the country from the Section 8 program. And that translated into $60 million that was taken directly from NYCHA and the city's program. So, in fact, we lost money that we expected we would be able to use this year to support our Section 8 program. We also requested that Congress, we pushed hard for them to raise the cap of the number of vouchers that we're allowed to issue legally, as well as provide us with additional funding, and that has not materialized.
You know, there's just no good news here, and it's not going to get any better. And John, last May, took the step of stopping issuing vouchers to anyone other than families really in distress.
In anticipation of all of this.
Sure, really in distress. Right. And, you know, I think this is symptomatic of what you're going to see at the city, state, and federal level in most parts of this country. Not all, but most. If you take a look, the federal government, in the end, they can keep printing money. It may hurt the country long term, hurt the dollar, whatever, but they can keep printing money if they want to, although there's a political element involved where some people don't want them to do that. Not, whether they're right or wrong, that's not the issue. The states and cities have to actually write checks and have money in the bank to cover those checks, unlike the federal government. And so, you know, if you think about the states just got done, or maybe done, who knows, trying to balance the current their current budget, which ends the end of March. They discovered all of a sudden a $3 billion hole. Why? Because they had been very aggressive in anticipating tax revenues, whereas a city, we've been very conservative anticipating tax revenues. So they all of a sudden discovered a $3 billion deficit in their current budget. We probably have $1 billion or something close to that surplus in this, but that's the money
this
for
year.
Next.
Yeah.
For the right. So, but anyways, in order to plug it, they've done a number of things. People are yelling and screaming. They have to face, in March, they've got to come up with a budget, $10 billion deficit included, and one-shots and borrowing. They borrowed money from the stimulus monies you just talked about that we're supposed, the state's supposed to receive stimulus monies next year. The state legislature took the monies from next year, moved it into this year, some of it, to balance this year's budget. They cut back the MTA. That's where all of a sudden the MTA, Jay Walter wakes up and, you know, has got a deficit he hadn't planned on. Everybody thought the MTA was going to be in good shape for a while. At least that was the promise. But the state cut back their money. The city's the same thing. Even if we do everything that we're planning in terms of economizing and combining and making choices and that sort of thing, we're going to have a tough time. We can get through, but if the state cuts us back or the federal government cuts us back, this city does not have any money to make up for those programs. We're just going to have to suffer.
John, I'm assuming that your demand is up for housing, correct? And so what happens to these people if you can't provide it?
So two things. To the mayor's point, yes, demand is up dramatically, and this is a national problem, not just a local problem. And we've worked hard to manage this problem. Some cities, for example, San Antonio and Omaha, they are actually terminating people from their Section 8 program, meaning people who are in homes and receiving assistance are actually losing that subsidy. We have not done that. As the mayor said, in May, we started, we limited voucher issuance only to families that were either victims of domestic violence or referrals from ACS or Department of Homeless Services. That cut our supply by 70%. So that was one way that we worked hard to manage this. But demand is absolutely up, and the families who are affected by this, the 1,500 or so families whose vouchers are not going to be activated, as well as all of the families that have been referrals from ACS or homeless services, will continue to receive support from other programs that we are working jointly with the state to ensure that we can pick up the funding for until Section 8 has additional funding.
All right, John, thank you. John Reed, Chairman for the New York City Housing Authority. Appreciate you coming in. Mr. Mayor, half-hour break. We'll be right back. Lots to do, lots to talk about. It's 8:32. All right, here we go again. If you want to get in on the questioning yourself, 800-321-0710. We'll be getting to your questions from Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
I have a question for you.
In just a moment. Yes, sir.
What is Matt Long doing? Now, you don't,
I don't know who Matt Long is.
Ah, but you should. Matt Long is a firefighter, and back during the transit strike, if you remember, in December 2009, he was bicycling to his firehouse and got hit by a bus, and then he worked. I don't know how many operations this guy's had today. He's now running a marathon after every bone in his body was broken.
My goodness.
I mean, it's really quite one of these great stories. He's a real hero in the fire department and for people with disabilities, and he shows you can come back. Anyways, he's helping with the fire department and the New York Blood Center blood drive. And we have a blood drive, and if you want to donate blood, and you use the code 4. Number 4, FDNY, will also trigger a $10 donation to be made to the FDNY-related charities. There's a bunch of them, police and fire, widows and children's benefit fund, the city's bravest scholarship, and the Carlos Lillo Memorial. But we all need blood. You can't live without it. And at this time of the year, fewer people, because they're busy with the holiday season, go in and donate blood. But if somebody gets hit by a car or you need an operation, an emergency operation, you need the blood, whether it's Christmas season or not Christmas season. Kwanzaa and Hanukkah seasons as well, incidentally. And so there's always an impetus at this time of year to get people to, you know, we need the blood now, not more than ever, but it's harder to get people, so you can make a bigger difference.
And it's
now.
No big deal either. I've given.
Yeah, and Matt Long's helping promote the program. He's a great guy. His father is a political, runs a conservative party in Brooklyn, and the family's a whole bunch. They own a whole bunch of bars, and all great guys, and you know, big firefighter history family. But Matt was hit by this bus, and they didn't think he'd survive. They bet enormous monies he'd never walk again. And now, and he's a physical fitness nurse. He does triathlons and this sort of thing. I mean, I can't even imagine. And he's just he's just tough inside.
Good for him. Good for him. Your reaction to the news that's coming from your new budget director that there are 2,700 accounts worth $122 million that nobody knew about?
Finance director.
Finance director.
New guy going through all of the things, making sure we're in compliance. There are, you got to be careful here, there's an enormous number of, if the fire department in a firehouse, they have a little kitty.
So that's a bank account.
And yeah, or the PTA bake sale. I mean, so there's some small things. Whatever the law is, if they're supposed to register, we'll register it. If the law is wasting everybody's time, we'll have to fix that.
Is there any indication that there's anything nefarious going on here?
No,
in any of
but
this?
This is the public's money. The public has a right to know. It's the bigger things, and whether nobody alleges that there's anything wrong going on. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't follow the law, and that doesn't mean we shouldn't have full disclosure. These accounts, under the law, are supposed to be registered with the finance department, and the controller, Bill Thompson now, and John Liu, starting January 1st, are supposed to audit them. And in all fairness, the controllers, they can't audit it if they're not registered. They don't even know they exist. And we didn't really know. I mean, maybe somebody did, maybe somebody didn't. Over the years, there's been every once in a while somebody mentioned something. But I don't think anybody's ever gone through every single account, bank account, that uses the city's tax number, I think is the way they tell. And our finance department commissioner is just doing a spectacular job. Let's get in compliance. Everybody get in compliance. Then you can argue about whether it's right or wrong or anything else.
As we move forward here, MTA, certainly a problem. Budget, you've mentioned already this morning, the city and the state and how it all integrates here. Congestion pricing. I talked with the governor yesterday. It was in a couple of his sentences. Is it coming? Is the Bloomberg congestion pricing coming back?
Well, I think if you call it the Bloomberg congestion pricing, we'll never do
it.
Well, nothing will happen, and that would be very sad. This is not about any one name. Look, what do we want to do in society? We want to clean up the air that we breathe and free the streets from congestion that stops commerce and keeps you from being able to get around. Taxing, you have to use the word congestion. Taxing automobiles and using the money to subsidize mass transit is fundamentally a way to make it less desirable to use your car, more desirable to use mass transit. What you want to do is you want to understand that some people have no choice, have to use their cars, so it can't be two owners. And you've got to use the money on mass transit not to subsidize the fares. Every time this turns around, people keep saying, take the capital monies and spend it today so we don't cut back. We will never get out of this situation, guys. You have to bite the bullet. We have to invest in going to bigger areas because not every part of the city and the region has mass transit. But you want more riders, and you want those people to not have to take their cars, which they really don't have a choice now. You want to make it more desirable, so it's got to be safer and go quicker and have better seats and whatever. And the easiest ways to do it, I suppose, if you want to tax the use of the automobile, you can tax the bridges because it's a choke point where everybody comes through, and you don't have to stop. In this day and age technology, you could go 35 miles an hour through and capture license plates and that sort of thing. You could do it on every street with license plate readers. Technology is getting better. The bridges would be easier. We suggested a few years ago, and I don't know the MTA would have had all its problems solved, but it would have had a lot of money and could have used most of that to get more bus lines, expand, make the subways run faster, make the subways safer. People are always worried about hardening them and that sort of thing. If we had put a tax on what the city had proposed was a few lower Manhattan bridges, what then, after the Senate turned that down last year, the Assembly, Shelley Silver, proposed taxing all the bridges around the city, a lot more than we ever had the nerve to do, and he couldn't get it through. The Senate turned that down. But in the end, the Senate and the House and the Assembly and the governor don't have money for mass transit.
The tension.
And they're going to have to get it someplace. So I don't know whether this comes back or something else. But where they have this 10 or no, 12, nobody really knows, billion-dollar deficit next March. March is only 3 months away. Nobody's, I mean, if people are screaming about what they've done now with a lot of one-shots and borrowing from next year and a handful of small cuts. Wait till they see what's going to happen in March.
Well, that's the tension to what you were just describing here, because now you're going to contract your mass transit system because of the budgetary issues at exactly the wrong time. You're making the argument that we want to get people out of their cars.
You know, it's like saying, let's save money, we'll cut out management. Everybody wants to cut out management. Well, if you ever want to make your system work better, what do you think managers do? I mean, this is the most, the dumbest thing in the world. We're going to put money where at the people, the working people. Well, managers work too, and they are the ones that make it more efficient and set priorities and get people to work together. And you
are you suggesting that the cuts, the draconian, as they label it, that was decided upon or voted on Wednesday by the executive board of the MTA, they're going to be worse than this come June, July?
Well,
there'll be more of it?
Let us hope that the revenues from what they call a mobility tax, which is really this regional tax on businesses, because they didn't want to tax people, so they tax businesses, which will pass it on, okay? The estimates are now that that's yielding less money than what they had projected and what the MTA had counted on. Now, keep in mind, projections for the future are projections for the future. People say, "How? Why didn't you know?" Nobody knows what's going to happen. Do you know what's going to happen in the Knicks tomorrow night? I don't know. You can hope. You can believe us. I know they're going to win. But that's not knowing in the sense. So they don't know what's going to happen to their revenue. They don't know whether people are going to take more or less mass transit. I do know that they've had the perfect storm. The state took away $143 million from them for this current year with only 2 weeks left to go. Now, is the state going to come through with $143 million that's in next year's budget? I don't know. I mean, if I were Jay, it's up to him. I'd take both of those out, the one you know you're not getting, and I wouldn't plan on one for next year.
And if you get it, you get lucky.
Should he count on $200 million that he thought he was going to get and now doesn't think he's going to get? You know, I'm always been very conservative. Let's budget for the worst case and be pleasantly surprised like we are in the city rather than surprised in the other direction. Because if you want to reduce your expenses, the earlier you do it, the less painful it is because you don't have to reduce it as much. So, for example, a city, we've asked all of our agencies to cut roughly, let's say, 4% in the second half of our current year. That means Jan 1, starting in 2 weeks, through June 30th. If we do that, the amount we have to cut the next year, which we've said is going to be 8%, is no worse than 8%. If we didn't do this 6 months, next year would be 10%. And too often legislators say, well, let's just not do it and let's pray. Keep in mind, the Albany legislature has an election coming up in 10 months and 2 weeks. And it's awful hard to go to the public and say we're cutting and taxing and whatever they have to do. But they are going to have to do it. And I've been saying again and again, they should have been doing it earlier. It would be easier on them. But that's their job. I've got to worry about the city. And the one thing is true, if for sure is true, if we pull together, we're going to have some pain, but we will get through this. We won't have to raise taxes. We'll maintain existing services. If the state cuts, let's say, a couple $1 billion out of our education budget, our education budget is $21 billion, 10 of which comes from the state. Used to be half and half. They've been cutting back. 10. If they cut that back to 8, we're going to all of a sudden have another $2 billion deficit. We can't do that. It's same thing for police, fire, and everything else. We will be okay, however, with some pain, with everybody pulling together. But if they start taking it out on us, and disproportionately on us versus the rest of the state or the rest of the country, then we're in big trouble.
All right, I got to take care of a little business. Speaking of numbers, it's 5 minutes before 9 o'clock. You mentioned it last Friday. There was going to be a vote. You're going to veto the Kingsbridge Armory
vetoed the vote yesterday, although I assume they'll override the veto. You know, it's really sad that there's all these construction jobs are high-paying jobs. All of the doorman and cleaning jobs are high-paying union jobs. They talk about 1,200 non-construction jobs. 60-odd percent of those get so far way over living wage. So they just vetoed a whole bunch of high-paying jobs. Very few low-paying jobs, but the low-paying ones at least give people some opportunity. And once they get trained, they move up into the other jobs. Now these jobs just aren't there. It's also true, these companies that would have gone there, you know, they employ summer help and that sort of thing. Think of the kids who now will not have summer jobs up in the Bronx. 13-odd percent unemployment. We're trying. This building has been empty for 30 years or something like that, with a big chain like Vince. Cost us $500,000, some number like that, a year to maintain an empty building. And now there's not a chance for going forward for a long time.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some folks on the phone here. We'll start with Gregory on Long Island. Right to the question. Greg, good morning.
Sure, Mr. Mayor. John, we love this. New York State is riddled with fraud in Medicaid. There's where all your billions of dollars are, Mr. Mayor. It's being swept under the carpet by Albany and City Hall.
What's your question, Greg?
Okay, why aren't we going after the fraud in Medicaid in New York State? It is massive, and no one is talking about it. It's being swept under the carpet.
All right.
Well, Greg, I don't know that nobody's talking about it. Some people are, and we have lots of programs. You know, if you go back in New York City, starting really under the Giuliani administration, continuing since then, we have worked very hard to make sure there's as little fraud. I'm sure there's some, but basically no fraud in the social programs that we have to help people. There is some fraud, I'm sure, in Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, taxes, everything, just because these programs are so big. And we should go after them. I'm not suggesting for one second we shouldn't. But the real answer is it would be a very tiny percentage. If you want to solve your budget problems, you've got to either find new revenue sources or spend less. But there's people that say, well, we'll solve all our problems with efficiencies and with reducing corruption, are just unwilling to face the two big things. You focus on revenues, you focus on expenses.
All right, Lois in New Jersey, what's your question for the mayor?
The question is, first of all, Mayor, I love listening to you on Friday mornings. You make so much sense.
Well, thank you very much, Lois. Where in New Jersey do you live?
Northern New Jersey.
Okay.
Oh, go with the question. We're running up against the
clock. Okay, question is, have a family member that was in the fireman's class that was canceled last year or postponed.
Right.
Have you got any plans for a reinstatement and when?
Can't give you an answer yet. It's all a question of how the fire department finds ways to meet their cutbacks, which are going to apply to every agency. I can tell you this, that we will at some point have no choice but to hire more firefighters because there's attrition out the other side, and we're going to keep this city safe. When there's a fire and a medical emergency and you call 911, we are going to dispatch a well-trained, hard-working, experienced firefighter to serve you. So I'm not trying to be evasive. I just think it's a little bit early to know exactly when. We've got to find ways to do more with less. So maybe some of the things that some people do, we'll find other ways to do it or use technology. But down the road, there clearly will be. And the fire department is one of the great jobs in the country. The people who, as her relative, John, who want to become firefighters, when they get there, they love the job. And a lot of them want to do it.
All right, let's see if we can sneak this one, the last one in. Joe, you've got to get right to your question real fast.
Mr. May, the Department of Ed is getting a budget cut in January from the principal's budget and custodian budget, but I'm wondering why the UFT got their raises for the next 2 years.
Why what?
The UFT and the teachers get their raises for the next 2 years.
Yeah, we're in the middle of negotiating a contract. Can't do that in public. I don't know that you have to assume or unassume anything. There's no question that we are going to have less money to spend. The city has less money to spend on education. I assume the state will cut back big time, and we're going to have to find ways to do more with less. The reality is you want to pay your workforce as well as you can, given the realities of the budget crisis. That's sometimes not as much as you'd like. You want to be competitive with other places so that the best and the brightest come here. You want them to focus on the classroom rather than how they're going to pay their bills. But the reality is in every part of our government, at the state, city, and local governments, and at federal governments, you're going to have to do more with less.
All right, we're going to have to do more with less because we're going to not meet for 3 weeks. We got Christmas on Friday next, New Year's the following one, and I'm going to be on vacation the third one.
Vacation?
Vacation.
This radio station gives vacation?
It's the only vacation I get. 1 week out of the
Have a great time. Happy holidays to everybody.
Yes, a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year to you as well, Mr. Mayor. All right, everybody, back on Monday. Have a good weekend.